You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. Today's episode is a conversation I had with reporter, comedian, talk show host, and hockey fan Julie Stewart Binks. Now, we recorded this conversation in early February, right before the Kings started trading away a bunch of beloved players. So we got caught up in all the trade coverage. Then there was the trade deadline, then the win streak, and of course, now the postponement. But we finally got a chance to bring this conversation to you. JSB has had an incredible career, and this is one of those conversations that I really wish could have gone for a few hours because I honestly felt like I could have asked so many other questions. But I suppose it's good to want people leaving more. If you do want to hear more from Julie, you can watch Drinks with Binks or Call It a Night on Fubo Sports Network. For scheduling and more info, visit FuboSportsNetwork.com. That's F-U-B-O SportsNetwork.com. Now here's Julie. Joining me now, Julie Stewart Binks. How are you doing today, Julie?
Hey, I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. There's an expression that says, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. You appear to be one of the busier people on the planet right now. You're wearing tons of hats. Where can people find you, and what are you up to today? Because I know you've got two shows on Fubo. I think you've got a podcast. You've got your social media.
Yeah, it is very busy, Jesse. It's you know what it's like when you aren't busy and you're kind of lying around like watching TV, you don't want to do anything. But then like when you're super busy, it's almost better because you're like, oh no, I don't have enough time to do anything. But yeah, I guess it's good. yeah, I have two shows right now. They launched when, so Fubo TV is kind of like Hulu, and they created, cause it's a streaming service, and they created a sports network, Fubo Sports Network. And so I have two shows. One's Call It a Night, which is kind of like a sports comedy show. And the other one is Drinks with Binks, which is like a longer interview, sit down over drinks. So it can be alcoholic, it can be coffee, it's whatever my guest wants, I'll drink with them too. And sometimes, people get wild. Other times it's like very serious. So I like the different demeanors. And then, yeah, I do some stuff for a network called SNY, Sportsnet New York, which is a little fun. I like to get a little bit weird and different and kind of not do the same old stuff. I used to be like a ringside reporter for the Anaheim Ducks, which is not what you say on this podcast.
That's
and
all
right. For, many other different realms, MLS and college football. And I kind of was like, you know what? I want to do something a little more fun, a little bit different. And the time is ripe now to sort of allow yourself to have personality and to do things differently.
So I was reading a bunch of interviews with you, and there's a million different angles that I wanted to come at this conversation from. So I'm just going to start with one, which is what you just touched on as far as the ability to create new content and operate in a sort of unconventional way with social media and with all of the different, streaming options and, traditional outlets. There seems to be a premium on authenticity and projecting, a sincere vision of yourself, and yet everybody wants safe, controlled, not too surprising, but not too surprising. How do you straddle that line of being experimental, getting your personality out there, like you said, on your show? Sometimes the guests are more conservative, other times they're a bit wilder. Is it difficult maintaining that back of mind presence, not to let things get out of control, but at the same time projecting authenticity and sincerity?
Yeah, I'm the biggest thing to me is like I come from a professional background of ESPN and Fox Sports 1 and CBS and a master's. So like I come from a safe place. And so then to be honest, like the more difficult thing was allowing myself to open up and to be a little bit more myself and to not be scared of being myself. And that like you could see people like Michelle Beadle and Katie Nolan and people like that, like they want to see that. And so I thought, this is who I am. Like I'm a bit more weird and quirky and I want to be me. So I kind of like started putting bits and pieces of myself out there. And then now doing some stand-up comedy, which I took a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm going back to do it again. I felt like I got more confident in just like being myself, but then also knowing in the back of my mind, like I don't want my guests to ever feel uncomfortable or that we're taking things too far. So I come from a place of understanding that. And then I allow them to open up and I give them the platform to say what they want and kind of, you know, I would like to push them to that, but I'm never going to put them into a corner to make them feel uncomfortable. So I like that. And I kind of try to say, hey, you know, I have a big guest coming on. Don't worry. You're safe here. If you do want to say something crazy, that's awesome. But at the same point, like, I'm not going to hurt your reputation and your career.
You mentioned stand-up comedy. You've done sideline reporting. You've done interview shows. You've done panel shows. I know you've done, you know, production of shorts and videos and everything. In all of those settings, you have either, you know, a little piece in your ear with the production truck telling you how much time you've got left, where to move, what to say, etc. On the panel shows, there's a stage director, producers, etc. But when you're doing stand-up comedy, how did you translate all of the skills you had already acquired and translate it into the sort of the little voice in the back of your head that has to tell you this is how much time you've got, this is the beats you have to reach, you know, the audience is responding or not responding? Is it more or less challenging than any of the other gigs you've had?
Yeah, it's definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. And that's for many different reasons. First of all, like TV, you cannot go over your time. When you see that red light go on, like, you have to, that's when you have to start telling your closing joke. And I've had times where luckily I didn't look at the time and the red light, but I had a really good closing joke. And the host afterward was like, honestly, I was told to take you off stage, but you were doing really well, so we let you go. But he's like, don't ever do that again. Like, that's how you never get asked back, is if you go over your time. So with comedy, it's like, you get feedback from people. In all those other circumstances you mentioned, like, you never hear anyone say anything back to you. You don't know, you know, whatever, if you're saying is good or funny or bad. But then when you're in front of people, you have to almost like account for the time too, that like, even if a joke might be kind of weak, someone might laugh at it. Like, there might be sometimes jokes, and I would go to open mics all the time and test out different numbers or different analogies, because some things get more of a laugh than others. Honestly, some numbers get more of a laugh than other numbers, which is like so odd, just like our brains like certain things. So then you have to account for them, people laughing, and then you don't want to just plow through the laughs, because then people will miss the next start of the joke. So you have to let it breathe. And that was a hard part for me, because I'm used to just, I memorize every single word of my set, my 5-minute set. And I heard John Mulaney say, oh, every word in my set has a reason to be there. But he's not necessarily memorizing every word. Like, I went overboard. Like, because I was a broadcaster, it's like, we prepare so much. So I thought, if I memorize every word, I'll never forget the joke. Well, then you're stiff, or you sound like a broadcaster. So then I had to have a joke about how I sound like a broadcaster. And then you just start leaning into things that are unique about yourself. And some people are like, oh, but I can't tell a joke. It's like, our lives have a lot of weird things that happen all the time. Like, even in broadcasting, the fact that in sports broadcasting, you do interviews in a locker room. Like, that's weird. So I just started being like, that's like doing your job in like a public restroom where, you know, everyone kind of hopes you see their downstairs area. Like, that's what's like in a locker room for a chick. Like, so you start kind of making analogies to daily life, and then it's easy. It's all like it's a formula in your head. And once you figure out what that is, it's hard to stop thinking about it.
Now, see, I said there was a million different ways I wanted to come at this. You just gave me 4 new ones in that answer. So I'm going to get the easiest one out of the way first. The funny numbers. Obviously, there's 2 numbers that everybody knows are hysterical. One of them starts with a 4. One of them starts with a 6. We don't need to go into that. But are there other funny numbers?
A comedian, actually an LA-based comedian, Chris Bowers, told me that like 7 and 11 like somehow get more of a laugh than others. So I started doing... It's odd. Like, you wouldn't like hear that when you're just here, but then it's like the way I put it into a joke, or it's odd. So you actually, that's why you do these open mics, is like, you try to figure out, you know, you record yourself the entire time, and open mics are really bad because it's just other comics there, so it's not a good test, but you try to see what works. And like, I did, I had a joke about going to a lot of bachelorette parties. And then I tied it into broadcasting. Like, then I did play by play, like I was Al Michaels of like a bachelorette party. Well, that took me like 10 times to figure out how that went. And you just have to like go out there in front of all these people who are judging you because they don't want you to be as good as them. And they try not to laugh. And you try to see what works. And it is like writing. It's like doing anything. It's just, you have to put yourself out there all the time. But I will say, Jesse, like, the high of doing comedy is incredible. And you can see why some of these guys, like I read Steve Martin's book and Robin Williams' book, it's like they would go four or five times in a night to different clubs because there's such an incredible euphoria of hearing people laugh at a joke you're telling. Like it's unlike anything in the world. And you don't get that in broadcasting. And that's probably why you see guys on the ice. Like you get that when you step out on, you're at Staples Center, you step out on the ice, everyone's cheering for you. Or even if you suck and they're booing you, it's like you get a reaction. And that's what shows you you're alive still, you know?
Sorry, you just keep, every time you answer something, you give me a million different things to follow up with. So as a performer, because even if you're doing an interview or your panel show or hosting your show, you are performing. I know you've also been an athlete in your life. You're a figure skater. You played hockey. You ran track and field. Is there a similarity between the focus that you need to summon in order to perform in a high-pressure athletic moment and when you're doing something live, whether it's stand-up or a sideline reporting or a live performance where you just cannot make a mistake?
Yes, 100%. I think it's almost like synonymous with one another, and especially doing sideline reporting where you're getting ready for a game and it's like, you know, you have your pregame hit and you have all these things you prepare for. It's like when the red light goes on, you can't mess up like at all. And so that's like an athlete. Like when the game starts, like you can't mess up. And so I treated it that way, especially when I did like games every weekend or travel with the Anaheim Ducks for 3 years and be like, yeah, these guys, like this is their morning skate. They're preparing for the game. Like this is my morning skate. I'm getting quotes and information of which I will then use in the game later on. So it's almost like the adrenaline really powers you through and then the preparation. And I think that those, while you're not like physically exerting yourself, you are mentally. And a lot of times, sometimes you are physically exerting yourself standing around for like 4 hours on a college football sideline, but not to the same extent. But yeah, I likened it very similar. And I think that's why you see such, you know, a transition or like a relation between athletes and reporters, because it's like, it's just the same type of feeling on just a different level.
It warms my heart to hear you talk about preparation so frequently. My father was an actor, and now I've done, some live TV stuff with Fox Sports. And the comment I've always heard is, well, anybody could do that. It's easy. It's simple. And I try to explain there's hours and hours and hours of work that nobody sees behind the scenes, right? Growing up, I'd watch my dad do line reads and, you know, prepare, et cetera, et cetera. How much preparation do you like to have going into, I mean, the reason I ask is because you've done stand-up now, you've done improv, and so you, not that you wouldn't have known it already, but you know how broad the spectrum is that you have to pull from to make something entertaining. How much prep do you like to do going into an interview or a more traditional, you know, broadcast or journalism performance?
I would say I would probably like prepare more than the average person. And that's not saying like trying to toot my own horn. I need to prepare a lot for stuff just to make myself feel comfortable. Whether it is, you know, I would go overboard on sideline reporting with like doing 10 interviews on my own and then whittling it down to like one good quote from each player. And then that like one line would make it on air of like all that kind of stuff. But yeah. Even like we just got back from Super Bowl week and I mentioned I have two shows. Well, we did one of my shows, Call It a Night, and I did over 30 interviews there. And, you know, I wrote them all myself. I researched them all myself. It was a nightmare, but I wanted to make sure that like whenever anyone sat down, and some of these guys, I'd never even really heard of before. Like some of these older NFL guys that like, oh yeah, you know, I've heard of them, but like, I don't know them that well. Like I want them to sit down and I have cue cards, but it's almost just like one word, you know, at that point you're just like, oh yeah, you know, this, I just want to be so prepared that I never have to feel uncomfortable. And I'm actually preparing for an interview with Brian Leach tomorrow night at a speaker series. And it's like, I want when Brian Leach to sit down, like that I know everything that I need to ask, or any, if he says something that I haven't prepared for, like, then I know I feel confident enough in myself that we can let it go anywhere. Like, and that's just a preference too. Like some people are, and I do a lot of improv as well. And I like weaving in preparation and improv because it's about preparing to the point that you know what you're going to do, but then also listening and sitting back and then being able to take avenues that you hadn't thought you were going to, like you are right now. You know, you just said, oh, you know, listening to what I'm saying, and then you jump on it. And that is like the biggest thing with all this. But sometimes you don't take those avenues if you don't know where you're going in a way, like, or what's going on. So yeah, I'm like an obsessive preparer. And sometimes that comes like, no, Julie, you're okay. You don't need to do any more of that. It's like, no, just for my own self. I want to keep researching and whatnot.
Well, I think it goes to the phrase you used earlier, which is comfort level. Speaking of comfort level, you have worked in a number of different environments that I think can be described, you know, as hostile to outsiders, whether it's soccer or hockey or college football or stand-up comedy or just being a woman working in professional sports. How do you combat an environment that may be initially hostile to your presence?
Like, I think that's a pretty broad question in terms of like,
well, let's start with soccer.
Yeah.
Let's start with soccer. It's because I think it shares something with hockey and that it has diehard fans who are, you know, dyed in the wool, generational. It's been passed down from, you know, father to son, mother to daughter, et cetera. When you come in and are trying to report to an audience who may be inclined to say they know more than you, how much work do you have to do to endear yourself to that fan base?
Well, I think like the biggest thing is that you mentioned earlier, like authenticity. Like when I do sports radio here in New York City, like people know I'm not from New York City. I live here, but I also can endear them to being like, you know, I've been around a lot of these teams. I've talked to these guys. I have a background. Like that's why I still play hockey because, well, I like it a lot, but I also want people to know, listen, I know what I'm talking about when I do it. And it's like just being, it's not being someone, trying to be someone you're not. And that's like, that's the biggest thing to come to terms with. It's like, especially in a market like where I am right now, like I'm not trying to know more than, you know, Jimmy from like the Bronx. Like I know he grew up as a Yankees fan and he knows top to bottom every single stat about them. But how can I then make like my perspective on it interesting and different? Well, sometimes I use comedy with that. So then I'll be like, okay, this is the Yankee situation. This is an analogy to make it more fun, or try to pose questions to look at it in a different way. Like I'm not going to say I'm an expert on anything. And I'm about to do a show in New York where it's called The Thread. It's like, it's a fun show on New York sports. Well, I'm not going to sit there and throw out stats on stuff, but what I am going to do is use those stats and find a fun way to present the information or talk about it in a way that like you and your friends would out at a bar. Because to be honest, that's like kind of what's appealing these days. Like no one wants to just sit and hear someone's slash line. Like they want to know what it means. And then like, oh, that's like this, if I were to go out to, you know, the theme park or some kind of weird thing like that. So I just try to be, who's Julie Stewart Banks? Like I'm not an expert on all these places. I have an opinion on these things. And how can I make that fun for people? So it's just about knowing who yourself is. And then there's always going to be people that will troll you, but they also just want your attention. So that's pretty much the bottom line.
Well, but let's talk about that attention. You made it's an imperfect analogy, but I read an interview where you said that you maybe hadn't realized that you earlier in your life that you wanted to host a show or to be in the vein of a Kimmel or a Fallon or someone like that. But to move from being a part of the broadcast or a part of the team to being the name on the marquee, right? You have two shows now, you know, that are Julie Stewart Banks properties, right? They are your show. How do you wrap your mind around being the focal point of attention, right? If a cameraman makes a mistake, if a producer makes a mistake, it's you're the one who's going to get the attention for it. But similarly, if the show is really excellent or if there's a really fantastic interview, you get the credit for that. Did you embrace that notion of being the entire focal point of attention? I don't want to say it. That makes it sound like I'm accusing you of trolling for attention, but I think you know what I mean.
Well, I think like if you want a show that has your name in the title, like you want to see yourself in the bright lights and you believe that you can do it. And everyone in this business has an ego. It's just recognizing that you have one and how to manage it. And so like so many people are like, oh, no, I don't have an ego or blah, blah, I don't want that. It's like, no, it's okay to have goals and dreams and want to be able to do that. And I didn't want to be like just the person that added information every 40 minutes, like a line or two. Like I wanted to be the person, and I've been open about that. And, you know, sort of leaning into improv and comedy and getting really good feedback from it, I thought, like, I know I want to do this kind of stuff. And I always was like that even in high school, like the class clown and kind of just like different and had this odd confidence in myself. I was like, let's do this. Like, let's try this. And, you know, again, I mentioned Katie Nolan, but, you know, she's been a great inspiration for me and kind of like, you have to be able to see it, right? And when you see another woman, especially in sports, do it, you're like, I can do that too. And like, it doesn't just have to be one person. You know, it's not just Conan. It's not just, you know, Kimmel or Fallon. It's many of them. And so I think that, you know, I've had young women reach out to me saying, oh, I love that you've sort of changed lanes in a way. It's not saying I don't like sideline reporting. I wouldn't do it again. But like, this is what really gets me going and the fire. And yeah, like you have more responsibility. So when things do go wrong or you do mess up, you know, you're under a microscope more. But then in a way, like I use it as like, because we are a newer entity, I kind of have fun with it. You know, if for one example is the other day, like my cameraman Todd was yawning as I was like trying to figure out which camera I was supposed to look at. And he had his arm up, and I thought he was telling me to look over at his camera, but he wasn't. So then I was just joking, like, oh, which camera? Oh, that one. Okay. All right. You know, like we're going to break. I'm like, I'm not going to say it's Todd's fault. I get, you know, it's mine. Right. Like I didn't know what camera, but it was funny. Like, and I think that's like with our show, we kind of, you know, we have a small budget. We're like newer and kind of just being like, this is like what it's like to do a TV show when this is what your resources are. And so I think people kind of take a liking to that, but yeah, you have to be willing to fail, but also like, that's why it makes you want to do so much more work. And that's why I spend so much more time booking my guests, writing my scripts, like writing ideas. And it does kind of make you go insane, but at the same time, it's like, wow, this is so cool to have this avenue. Like, think of how I always remind myself, like, I never take anything for granted. I'm like, this is amazing. No matter how hard and tired, like I'm working, I'm so lucky to have my own show. So I'm really fully embracing it. And I hope I can continue to do this and then eventually make lots and lots of money with it. But at least right now I know what I like to do.
That's what it's all about, right? Listen, yeah. I promise I haven't been avoiding the duck subject. I've been holding off on it. I could talk to you, I think, for hours about all this, but I do have to get into the hockey side of it because this is a Kings show. You're born in Toronto. You watch hockey, you play hockey, you're fully in the world. You go to work for the Ducks. I've got to ask, who's the worst Duck, like just to deal with personality-wise? I know you won't answer, but I've got
to
ask.
Great question to start off with. Honestly, like, see, I know you like probably don't want to hear this, but they're all very nice to me.
I didn't
like,
want to
hear
that.
That's a good thing, though. Like, you want people to be nice people. You know, you can make your own assumptions of kind of the guys you see on the ice will have some, like, if they have a bad personality on the ice, they might be a little bit, like, standoffish. Like, you know, Ryan Kessler's always a bit of, like, a different animal, right? Like, he was always a, you know, kind of a bit of a jerk on the ice. And like, he wasn't like a warm character off the ice, but he did interviews that I asked him to do. He wasn't like my BFF by any means, you know, but I would say like, they were all very nice to me. I liked that they treated me with respect, and they, you know, I'll always remember, you know, Ryan Getzlaff. You know, I had an annoying professional thing happen that was really, I don't want to talk about it, but it was like, really got me down. And he was like, hey, you know, keep your head up. Like, we all really think you do a good job and we appreciate you. And I was like, wow, that was like really cool. Like, you didn't have to say that to me. And it meant a lot. But I also, I'm not a Ducks fan. Like, I'm not a fan of the team. I'm a Leafs fan. But I'm a professional. So like, especially when they play each other, like you would want the team playing to be happy after the game. So I'd be like, all right, like, I hope the Ducks beat the Leafs then. Like, cause I don't want to be like on a sad plane home. Like, that kind of blows. But you know, I spent time with the Kings too. That was like my first sort of foray in the States to an NHL team. I filled in for Patrick O'Neill on a number of broadcasts on the weekends and got to hang out with Sean O'Donnell and Foxy, and the guys were great. And I loved doing that. I wished logistically I lived in LA. So like, I would have liked to have done the Kings rather than driven to Anaheim every day. But you know, that's just like, how things work out. So, and I covered the Kings in the 2014 Stanley Cup run, which was very, very exciting. So, you know, I like the Kings a lot too, but yeah, my professional sphere sort of took me to 3 years with the Ducks. I was supposed to be filling in for three games and I ended up being there for 3 years.
That's how life works, right?
You
make plans.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so I'm going to backtrack to something you said and divert briefly away from hockey back to the journalism question. You said that you're a Leafs fan, but that you're also you're a journalist, right? So the rumor is that journalists are meant to maintain objectivity. But you also said you don't want to find yourself on a miserable flight home. And so this is where I sort of... I don't ever claim to be objective. I tell people right up front, I'm a lifelong Kings fan. I'm a lunatic. I'm crazy. The fortunes of the team have a way too huge impact on my emotional state. Do you believe the notion that journalists should be objective, as you just said yourself, it may be objective in the sense of you don't care if one team wins over the other in the grand scheme of things, but you want things to go well for you personally and for your career, right? I mean, it's better for you, as you said, mm-hmm. you covered the Kings in 2014 for the Cup run. I mean, do you see other journalists, do you think it's a problem in sports journalism that everybody pretends to be objective, even if they're really rooting for themselves?
I think it's like changed a little bit over the years. First of all, I'll start with the fact that like people that aren't really on the ground floor, like if you're a host of different shows, like people are showing more of their colors for different teams now. And it's sort of fun and different. Like I was like pumping up the Raptors last year and wore like a fun, like did a fun thing on TV. And it was like, that's cool. Cause like, I'm not interviewing the Raptors or like, I'm not covering the NBA. Like seeing like, yeah, when you're in journalism school and you're like, I won't, you know, don't, you have to be impartial and unbiased. And then you get to, for instance, the Stanley Cup Finals in 2014. I'll never forget. We were in the media room at Staples Center, and we all of us put money on like who would score the overtime winner. But you had to pick one from each team.
Right.
So I picked Ryan Callahan from the Rangers, and I picked Alec Martinez from the Kings. So
good job by you.
Yeah, and everyone was like, when I like of all the media people, and they're like, who picked Alec Martinez? I'm like, well, I mean, like he'd scored the, you know, the winner in the series before, like maybe you do it again. But I do remember I was like, I was pretty green in reporting, and I'm like, ooh, I hope the Rangers win this game because I want to see the series keep going. Like I love this. And I remember Bob McKenzie from TSN was like, they just wanted the Kings end. So like, then they could then, well, obviously for agencies like, and the draft, but so they could just get on with their lives. Like, you know, we're not all like, people don't really care about like what team wins and what team loses when you are in it every single day. And you're like, you know what? Like, I want to go home and see like my kids and my family and, or I want to do other things with my life. And then it becomes more of a job, right? Rather than like, I love the Leafs. I would cry if I saw them win the Stanley Cup, but, am I going to like lose sleep over the fact they lose like a regular season game against the Ducks where then I have a better situation going home? Like, yeah, like you kind of become a bit more selfish, I guess. You're like, yeah, I don't really care. Like, yeah, I need this team flight 6 hours home to be not like a funeral.
So before we let you go, Julian, thank you again very much for joining us. Is there one person that you've interviewed or an athlete that you've dealt with live during a game that you just felt really nailed everything that you would hope for out of an interview, or that you really enjoyed, or you learned something from, or just, you know, the peak of your experience?
That's a great question. I need to figure out, have that answer at the tip of my fingers, but I think it's when you get guys to kind of like open up a little bit more in a game, very difficult. So sometimes I would try to just be like, oh, your stick was like stuck in a weird way. Like, you know, how weird was that for you or something? And then they'll like laugh and be like, yeah, I had no idea. My stick was like in some other guy's pants. Like we'll have a, like Benny said this and blah. And you're like, okay, because the same old is just like, gets annoying. So, but I interviewed Martin St. Louis. I know I talk about this playoff series a lot, but when Martin St. Louis' mother passed away during the Stanley Cup, you know, he talked about it. Like it was the first time he'd ever talked about it on camera. And he like got very emotional. And he said to the PR person afterwards, like, that was the hardest interview I've ever done. And like, as a journalist, I don't want to like ruin his life, but like, that's a compliment to me that like,
yeah,
okay, I challenged this guy and he was very open about it. And I really like that. And then when I do interviews now on my Drinks with Binks show, we have like way more time so we can kind of get into stuff. And like Sean Avery and I are in with regards to the Don Cherry issue with him being fired from Hockey Night Canada. And like, you do it in a way that's like, I have an opinion on it, but I'm also very open to hearing like, okay, well, what's your stance on it and why? And then we can discuss like what's understandable about that and what's problematic about that. And so I kind of have come to a point now where it's like, I really like more of a discussion with some of these people. And then when you have this platform, when you have more time with questions and issues, whereas like a sideline interview is going to get that, it is important because sometimes you just never know what you could get. Like, you know, Peyton Manning saying, oh, I'm going to go home and drink a Budweiser now. Like, that's so weird. You never thought he'd say that. Like, that's why some people are always like, oh, sideline reporters, oh, it's so stupid. I'm like, no, sometimes they can say something. And like, it's all about not making yourself the story. Like, so many people try to showcase that they know so much. And it's like, I don't care if like Robbie727 thinks I'm a dumb blonde if I ask a simple question and I get a really good response. Like, it's all about the quote. It's not about the person. So once you kind of like take your ego out of it, you actually get way better responses. But that takes time. So that's what I've learned.
Well, you've had a fascinating career, and I anticipate that it'll only get more fascinating moving forward. I want to thank you for joining me. I feel like I could pepper you with questions all day, but I know you've got other stuff to do.
Well, Jesse, thanks so much for having me. And I know it's been a down year for you guys, but you got some, I can't believe some of the guys on the Kings are still there. It's like they're just resurrected from the death, but that's great. And I love watching that team. And Staples has incredible fans, and the Kings have great fans. And I know it's been a difficult couple of weeks for all of you guys. So sending all my love and hugs from out east.
Well, we appreciate it. And hopefully we can talk to you again sometime down the road when the fortunes turn around.
Sounds good.
All right. Julie Stewart Binks has been my guest. She has two shows, Call It a Night with Julie Stewart Binks and Drinks with Binks. Both can be found on Fubo TV. Julie, thanks again.
Thanks, Jesse.